Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second hour of the Arizona Republic. And a happy Father's Day to all you dads out there. This is the Sunday, June 15th, 2025 issue of the Arizona Republic, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader today. During the next hour, I'll cover the obituaries, the business and sports news, the local sports, that is. Then we'll have a look at some opinions, and we'll end up with the horoscope, the almanac, and the funnies. So I hope you enjoy the program today. I'll begin with the obituaries. Richard Babcock, Dr. Penelope Penny L. Baker, Jack Michael Beta, Dr. William Bill Bonert, Marquetta Jewel Debler, Arlene Feldman, Marla Christina Giraldo, Don Hassman, Billy Rex Johnson, Donna Lynn Keefe, Jane Reinhold Lynch, Ralph Henry Papetti, Jacqueline Jackie Ann Ranby, Andrew David Solicito, and James P. Sicken. And those are the obituaries today, so we'll turn now to the Arizona economy. The first article in the Arizona economy section is how Arizona's big companies stack up on CEO and employee pay, by Russ Wiles, a columnist for the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. If you're not making at least $100,000 a year, it might be time to look around for a new employer, perhaps with the big company down the street. At least 10 Arizona-based corporations now pay their employees $100,000 or more on average, and one is now above $200,000. Overall, Arizona pay scales are more moderate, with an average figure around $75,000, according to an analysis of the 30 most valuable corporations with headquarters in Arizona. Public companies must disclose median or midpoint pay, including benefits for their workers. With a median and midpoint average, half of the employees earn more and half earn less. The purpose is to compare average employee pay to that of each company's CEO, to derive a pay ratio that shows how much more the top executive earns. Among Arizona's larger companies, the typical ratio is more than 100 to 1. But some are above 1,000 to 1, reflecting extreme inequality. Companies don't disclose the name of the median pay employee, though sometimes they describe his or her job title and where the person works. Larger, more profitable companies tend to pay more, though compensation also depends on other factors, such as a firm's industry and how many foreign workers are employed, especially in lower-wage regions such as East Asia. Here are America's top 10, gleaned from annual proxy statements that list CEO pay that can run 30 pages or more. Axon Enterprise, median employee pay, $205,322. The Scottsdale-based maker of taser weapons, armor, and body cameras pays the most among larger Arizona public corporations. Axon has been on a profit and revenue roll in recent years and now ranks as Arizona's third most valuable corporation, based on stock market worth. Patrick Smith reported compensation of $164.5 million in 2024. Making him the most highly paid CEO, not just in Arizona, but nationally. Axon's CEO employee pay ratio stands at a lofty 801-1, though the company says Smith's compensation reflects a multi-year package and isn't as high as it seems. Pinnacle West Capital, median pay $168,002. This Phoenix-based holding company for Electric Utility Arizona Public Service offers the second highest employee compensation in the state. However, its CEO employee pay ratio is of 65-1 is low, suggesting that pay is spread relatively evenly among the rank and file. The ratio is based on 2024 compensation of just under $11 million for then-CEO Jeffrey Guldner, who has since retired and has been replaced by new CEO Ted Geisler. Pinnacle West's employees are almost all based in Arizona. Taylor Morrison Home Corporation, median pay, $137,923. Home builders tend to pay well, and that includes Scottsdale-based Taylor Morrison. The company listed compensation of $15.4 million for CEO Cheryl Palmer in 2024, which translates to a CEO employee pay ratio of 112-1. Taylor Morrison said it used 2023 employee figures for this comparison rather than updating them last year. Proxy regulations allow companies various types of leeway when calculating employee pay, including this one. ON Semiconductor, median pay $136,130. This corporation calculated employee compensation in two ways, for its U.S. workers, shown above, and a separate figure of $15,850 for its global employees, most of whom are concentrated in China, the Philippines, Vietnam, and other low-wage nations. When compared to CEO Hossein El-Khoury's compensation of $31.1 million, this produced two CEO employee pay ratios, 229-1 for U.S. employees and an eye-popping 1,998-1 for the company's overall workforce. Meritage Homes Corporation, medium pay, $135,529. Meritage, with headquarters in Phoenix, is the other home builder among the top 10 Arizona corporations that pay employees relatively well. CEO Philippe Lord earned a tad under $12 million, which equates to a ratio of 88-1 when compared to midpoint employee pay at Meritage. GoDaddy, median pay $114,302. This Tempe company, founded by colorful Arizona billionaire Bob Parsons, helps people register internet web addresses, build websites, and manage them. CEO Aman Bhutani received compensation of $19.5 million last year, which translated to a fairly steep ratio of 170-1 compared to midpoint employee pay. Most of GoDaddy's employees work in the U.S. The Carlisle Koss, median pay $112,145. This company makes and supplies building products, including roofing materials, wall panels, insulation, and waterproofing items. Most of Carlisle's workforce is domestic. The Scottsdale-based company reported 2024 compensation of $14.2 million for CEO D. Christian Koch, compared to median employee pay, that works out to a ratio of 127-1. Western Alliance Bank Corporation, median pay $112,120. Banking and financial services can pay well, though Arizona isn't home to many larger companies in these fields. Phoenix-based Western Alliance, the parent of Alliance Bank of Arizona, and others is an exception. The company's employees earn six digits on average, which equates to a 92-to-1 ratio when compared to the 2024 compensation of $10.3 million for CEO Kenneth Vecchione. Centuri Holdings. Median pay $107,794. This is one of Arizona's newest public companies, following its separation from Southwest Gas in 2024. Centuri provides infrastructure maintenance and construction for utility companies, mainly in natural gas and electricity, but also in solar, wind, and other areas. Centuri had an unusual situation in 2024, four CEOs during the year. The company tabulated total compensation for the group at $12.3 million. When compared to average employee pay, the ratio came out to 114-to-1. What about Arizona's other bigger companies? Several other Arizona corporations pay just under $100,000 on average. The list includes two of the state's most valuable corporations, Trash Hauler Republic Services, $84,950 median pay, ratio of 153-to-1, and copper mining giant Freeport McMoRan, $98,257 in median pay, ratio of 228-to-1. Among larger Arizona companies, companies paying relatively little include used car seller Carvana, $47,111 median pay, 225-to-1 ratio, grocery chain Sprouts Farmers Market, $31,784 median pay, 385-to-1 ratio, and dental devices company Align Technology, $24,348 and a 1,122-to-1 ratio. And that completes the first article, How Arizona's Big Companies Stack Up on CEO and Employee Pay, by Russ Wiles, a columnist for the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. The second article is titled Resellers Cashing In on Retail Returns. Customers Can Save Big on Wide Variety of Items, by Betty Lynn Fisher of USA Today. Sarah Kahn has been decorating her Las Vegas home with counter stools, a pool lounger, and bathroom vanity, while regularly saving 40-80% off retail prices. Tony Amrhein of Uniontown, Pennsylvania, has been stocking his eBay store with automotive parts for his side hustle, and also saving regularly off retail prices. When items are returned to retailers, they are often steeply discounted and sold by a third-party company. Both Kahn and Amrhein have been benefiting from scooping them up, while bargain hunters have been finding deals at stores that liquidate returns and overstocked items for years. A new wave of shoppers are finding deals on their phones or computers and solving a problem for the retail industry, finding new life for returned products that may otherwise go to a landfill. Returns cost retailers a lot of money. Total returns were expected to top $890 billion in 2024, according to a report in December 2024 by the National Retail Federation. Retailers estimated that 16.9% of their annual sales in 2024 would be returned. Companies that resell those returned items help the retailers, said Lauren Beidelspacher, a professor in the marketing division of Babson College in Wellesley, Massachusetts, whose research includes return policies. And for customers, it gives them the thrill of the hunt, she said. customers could come across some unexpected treasures for a fraction of the cost, additionally keeping unsold inventory in circulation rather than incineration, is a more sustainable model, she said. A better solution than landfills. Emily Hosey founded Rebel in 2020, which is an online store for open box returns and overstocked items from major retailers and brands. The site uses proprietary AI software to set competitive and deeply discounted prices for its items, typically at least 50% off, with free shipping after $75 in purchases. Oversize items have an extra shipping fee. Hosey started the company when she was pregnant and looking for discounted baby gear. It recently added general home goods, such as kitchen, bedding, and bath products, and planned to expand into more categories, she said. Many returns, unfortunately, are dispositioned to the landfill, regardless of their condition, said Hosey, adding that the cost and complexity of handling returns for retailers is not worth it for a lot of companies. We are interrupting that and are a solution. Hosey said the difference in Rebel's items compared with other models is their guarantee that the items have never been used and all parts are included. If not, they can be returned. Kellen Campbell is the founder of Mac.bid, an online auction site that buys thousands of full truckloads of returned items directly from the retailer every month and sells them via its website and phone app. The advantage to our model with the auction is that we don't have to price anything, Campbell said. Everything starts at a buck. Successful bidders go to a local warehouse to pick up their items. The company is on track to have 30 locations nationwide by July. Major retailers also have their own return resale options for consumers. An Amazon spokesperson said returns that are deemed resellable might be sold on its resale platform. Others may be returned to seller partners, donated or liquidated. Morgan Donaldson of Charlotte, North Carolina, started buying baby goods from Rebel when her kids were young. Her best deal was a high-end bassinet that saved her $500 off retail. Once her baby was done using it, she resold it on her own for the price she paid. You really notice the price difference on these big-ticket items, she said. When Khan first discovered MacBid, she was immediately hooked by the range of products, the prices, and the urgency of an online auction bidding platform. You're searching through the site and finding all these little gold mines, and then given the option that there's this, like, countdown and urgency to it that got me hooked, said Khan, who has bought such items as counter stools, a pet grooming kit, wine fridge, a Dyson hair straightener, a kid's play desk, and Dyson air fan and heater. Some sites, like Mac.bid, allow customers to pay an extra premium for what they call buyer's assurance or the ability to return the product. Other sites don't offer returns, so shoppers take their chances. Khan said for electronic purchases, she usually always buys the extra protection, but otherwise she takes her chances. Most times she's had no problem, and even when she's gotten something that was broken or missing pieces, she said, coming out ahead on other purchases still made it worth the gamble. Armhein, who works for a nonprofit by day, has had an eBay store for 15 years. He sources his products from a variety of places, including flea markets, thrift stores, and garage and estate sales. He also buys from MacBid to add variety to his inventory. Campbell said his employees use software that scans the item to identify it, and if there is damage to the box or product, that will be noted. Some items are too damaged to put up on sale, and will be sold for parts, he said. Other times there may be two or three boxes for a product, and a buyer will purchase them at a steep discount with the hopes that the third box will show up in a future auction, he said. Campbell said his company doesn't make money on each item or even each truckload of goods. We're giving you a killer deal, Campbell said. Most of the stuff is selling somewhere between 70% to 80% off the retail price. Kahn said she usually pays the premium for buyer's insurance for electronics, but sometimes takes her chances. You win some, you lose some. That's the end of the article, Resellers Cashing In on Retail Returns, by Betty Lynn Fisher of USA Today. And that completes the business news today, so I'll move to the sports news. The first article is titled, Diamondbacks Head for Canada, Then Denver, by Jose M. Romero of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. The Arizona Diamondbacks finished up a weekend series with the San Diego Padres on Sunday, June 15th, with right-hander Merrill Kelly on the mound, looking for his 7th win of the season. Following a day off on Monday, June 16th, the Diamondbacks head to Canada for the only time this season to play the Toronto Blue Jays, June 17th to 19th. The Diamondbacks were swept in a 3-game series in mid-July 2023, the last time they visited Toronto. It's the start of a 3-city, 9-game road trip that includes Denver and Chicago after Toronto. The Diamondbacks completed a sweep of the Seattle Mariners last week prior to playing the Padres. They hit 2 grand slams in 3 days, one for Toronto area native Josh Naylor and the other for Eugenio Suarez. The Blue Jays won 7 of 8 games between June 4th and June 11th, moving into second place in the American League East. Their stars are Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, George Springer, and one of baseball's best-hitting catchers, Alejandro Kirk. Toronto is 13-12 all-time against Arizona. This season, the Diamondbacks have already played 3 other AL East teams, the Yankees, Orioles, and Rays, with only the Boston Red Sox left in September after they play the Blue Jays. Jeff Hoffman entered play on June 12 with 17 saves. He's a former starting pitcher who has become an effective closer. From Toronto, the Diamondbacks head to Colorado for a 3-game series against the Colorado Rockies in Denver, June 20th to 22nd. The Diamondbacks took 2 of 3 games against the Rockies in Phoenix last month. Colorado has been at the bottom of Major League Baseball in wins for much of the season. The Diamondbacks are 21-8 in regular season games against the Rockies since the start of the 2023 season. And that completes the article, Diamondbacks Head for Canada, Then Denver, by Jose M. Romero of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. This next story is written by Bob McManaman of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. Parents, kids playing sports need to follow their dreams. Just like there's no textbook on how to become a perfect father, there's no exact blueprint to follow when it comes to teaching, coaching, and training your kids on how to become an accomplished athlete in his or her chosen sport, if that's what your son or daughter truly wants. The first important thing is just that they ensure this really is the kid's dream, said Betana Leinert, a Harvard-trained psychologist who has been in private practice in Scottsdale since 1991. I have certainly had people on my couch who come in years later when they're adults and talk about how their parents pressured them or one or the other parents pressured them, because the parent is actually living out their own dream for the kid. That's obviously a danger, because kids are eager to please their parents. They need to have the conversation with the kid and ask them, "Is this really your dream? Don't do it for me. Do it for you, if that's what you enjoy." We've all probably heard, seen, or know about the gung-ho dad who was hell-bent on turning little Johnny into an NFL quarterback, shaping tiny Timmy into a major league pitcher, or pushing petite Pam into becoming an Olympic gymnast. Sometimes it might work. Usually it doesn't. Dr. Leinart says it's important to give your children, quote, permission to not pursue that dream. "When I look back at my patients," she said, "they don't want to disappoint their parents, so sometimes they abandon themselves in that process and don't stand up for themselves because they are so motivated by getting their parents' approval." Kids are very vulnerable to that because kids haven't developed that internal sense of, "I'm okay, even without this approval." That's a process that happens throughout human development, which is long and complex. It's a very powerful reinforcer that makes it feel impossible for kids. I think sometimes to not do the thing they know their parents want them to do. As an example, Leinart mentioned a recent female patient who had been pushed into a sport she didn't love and didn't wish to pursue. But there was no option for her not to in her family, unfortunately, Leinart said. She was very talented in the sport, but she didn't enjoy it. It's hard to imagine anyone being able to do that. The best thing a parent can do to help a child or teenager who is interested in becoming successful in a sport of their own choice, Leinart says, is to provide quality and meaning support and encouragement. Instead of pressuring their son or daughter, they should praise the effort and progress at each turn and be careful not to solely focus on the outcomes or the wins. It plants good seeds for self-esteem in that we have a sense of confidence in things that we're good at, Leinart said. We have a sense of contribution, and we have a sense of belonging. Being on a sports team provides those things in spades, especially if it's coming from a good, supportive place from the parent, as opposed to the pressure. It's also important to keep the focus on allowing it to continue to be fun. If they're not enjoying it anymore, they're going to quit at some point, or they're not going to excel. And that completes the article, Parents, Kids Playing Sports Need to Follow Their Dreams, by Bob McManaman of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. I'll interrupt the program briefly to remind those of you who may have tuned in late, this is the second hour of the Arizona Republic, the Sunday, June 15th, 2025 issue, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. That completes the sports and business section of our broadcast. I'm going to move now to viewpoints or opinions. The first is by Elvia Diaz, a columnist for the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. Her title is, "Why Isn't Trump Going After Employers?" Trump immigration agents aren't going after employers. They are rounding up farm workers, day laborers in Home Depot parking lots, kitchen staff, construction crews, and meatpacking plant workers. These are literally the workers building and feeding America. But don't worry, This isn't about the immigrants who do the dirty jobs that Americans won't do, often under terrible working conditions, or the unfairness of splitting families and upending their lives. It's about the employers who rely on undocumented labor and their deafening silence as their workforce gets swept up by mask immigration and customs enforcement agents. ICE work raids and the agency's tactics arresting migrants at immigration hearings came to a boiling point over the past few days as Trump sent federal troops to quash protests in Los Angeles. The protests have spread across the nation. I've been wondering why Trump is only going after the workers, while the businesses that hire them, often in clear violation of federal law, get a pass? Consider this. Undocumented immigrants contribute nearly $90 billion in federal, state, and local taxes, according to the American Immigration Council. That means employers hired them, withheld taxes, and paid them, all while violating federal law. After all, there is a tool called E-Verify, the online system that lets employers confirm whether a new hire is authorized to work in the U.S. In some instances, failure to use E-Verity can result in fines, suspicion, or revocation of business licenses. And yet, undocumented immigrants keep landing jobs practically in every corner of America. So why aren't immigration agents rounding up employers? Because enforcement is selective, and businesses are being let off the hook. Take the case in Nebraska this week. ICE agents arrested nearly 100 workers in a meatpacking plant. Local media reported that its owner told investigators the employees had used false IDs and that the company had used E-Verify. If that's true, then the system is flawed. And if so, why hasn't the federal government fixed it, especially given long-standing concerns about its accuracy? The real answer? Business interests, large and small, rely heavily on undocumented labor, and everyone has looked the other way for decades. Corporate lobbying groups like the Chamber of Commerce and local business leaders, including those in Arizona, have helped shape immigration policy, blocking anti-immigrant laws and pushing for work visa reforms and paths to legalization. But now, crickets. Where are those business owners and industry leaders now that Trump is rounding up and deporting their workforce? Where are the defenders of capitalism now that even deeper labor shortages will likely hit construction, agriculture, and food production? They're quiet, terrified of Trump, avoiding his wrath at all costs, even if it means sacrificing the very people who helped them build their wealth. In California, for instance, where Trump's raids have hit the home building industry hard, multiple home builders didn't respond to requests for comments from local media. And the head of the National Association of Home Builders in Washington, D.C., could only manage to say that they're, quote, watching all the developments very carefully, end quote. That's it. I'm not seriously calling for employers to be jailed. Trump already has taken punishing political opponents to alarming extremes. But the hypocrisy is glaring. Politicians, executives, and business owners profited from undocumented immigrants, including Trump's own business that have employed undocumented immigrants. More than 4% of the nation's 170 million person workforce is made up of undocumented immigrants. The New York Times reported, these workers are younger as the U.S. workforce ages, meaning that immigrants could potentially keep generating billions of dollars in federal and state revenue without getting any of those benefits in return. I don't expect employers to join the protesters or admit guilt to illegal hiring, especially since there are plenty of deniability loopholes available to them. But they could at least sound the alarm about what could happen if we don't have people to build homes, pack meat, and pick produce. Instead, they stay silent, betraying not just the workers on which they rely, but the very system of capitalism that they claim to champion. That's the end of the column. Elvira Diaz is editorial page editor for the Arizona Republic and azcentral.com. You can reach her at 602-444-8606 or Elvira.diaz@republic.com. And the title of her column was Why Isn't Trump Going After Employers? Our next opinion comes to us from the Your Turn column by Stephen Richer, a guest columnist. Phoenix needs a lot more traffic cameras. Three drivers die every day in Arizona. In 2022, Arizona had 17.7 motor vehicle deaths per 100,000 people. The national average is 12.8. Our fatality rate is 1.71 deaths per 100 million vehicle miles. The national average is 1.33. We have the nation's highest rate of red light fatalities. Want to save these lives? Write to the city of Phoenix. They're currently considering the widespread deployment of red light and speed enforcement cameras. Tell them to do it. And write to your state legislator. They've tried multiple times to ban these traffic cameras. Tempe recently reintroduced red light cameras in the city, joining cities like Scottsdale, Mesa, and Goodyear that already have them. The case for red light and speed cameras is straightforward and overwhelming. They save lives. The evidence here is consistent. A University of Arizona study of Phoenix found that red light cameras reduced deaths and injuries by 28%. Similarly, a report by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety found that photo enforcement reduced the fatal red light running crash rate of large cities by 21%, and the rate of all types of fatal crashes by 14%. And a 2017 assessment of Scottsdale discovered that traffic speed cameras reduced, quote, speed-related crashes by 65%, end quote. They save money. Every accident is expensive. That's especially true if it takes somebody out of the workforce. The Federal Highway Administration found that large cities that deploy traffic cameras reap millions of dollars per year in property damage savings alone. Cameras don't discriminate. They don't discriminate based on race, sex, how sporty your car is, or whether you have the stickers that show you donate to the police. My mom had those on her car when I grew up in Utah. They're safer for law enforcement. Routine traffic stops by police officers, whether for speeding or running a red light, can be dangerous. They cause confrontations that can lead to violence against the police officer. Simply being on the side of the road, outside the vehicle, is a dangerous situation for a police officer. It's perhaps for this reason that police organizations, like the Arizona Police Association, overwhelmingly support photo enforcement. They're a better use of law enforcement. Police officers are highly trained specialists, and we don't have enough of them. Officers should focus on serious crimes and the necessary training to succeed in these challenging environments, not spend countless hours watching cars drive by. There are no off hours. Drivers at least safe at night. That's also when we have fewer police officers on the road. And for those officers who are on night duty, I'd imagine it's a grind that nobody wants to do for multiple years. Street cameras don't need to sleep. They don't need breaks. They are just as present and just as effective during the night as they are during the day. Tickets are reviewable. Traffic photos are reviewed by trained human officers before they are issued to the driver. The driver always has a right to challenge. They are lawful. Weirdly, some state legislators think traffic cameras are unlawful, despite having had them in parts of Arizona for many years. They're not. They're lawful. Both state and federal courts have consistently ruled in their favor. If you tune on Fox 10, ABC 15, Arizona Family, or 12 News at night, you're going to hear about a horrible accident. We already have the tools to improve this situation. Let's use them. That's the end of the column. The author, Stephen Richer, is a former Maricopa County recorder. He is now a senior fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government's Ash Center, an adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute, and CEO of Republic Affairs. The title of his column was "Phoenix Needs a Lot More Traffic Cameras." Next are some opinions from letters to the editor. The first comes from Daniel Morrow of Phoenix. "Jets from Luke Air Force Base are ruining our lives." When, how, and why did the West Valley become the new flight path for Luke Air Force Base jets? They fly above homes, affecting hundreds of thousands of people every day and night. The noise is deafening. There are about 25 or more every day, and there are another 20 or so every night until after 11 p.m. Who authorized this? This has changed the lives of West Valley residents. This base has an incredible amount of acreage for training to its west, yet they choose to fly over the West Valley. These are our homes. We live here. This has changed people's lives. The frequency and incredible intense noise are hard to describe. I don't know who has the audacity to think this is acceptable. The next comes from Mary Patton in Tucson. "Why aren't schools teaching media literacy? As a retired Arizona teacher, I've noticed a steady decline in critical thinking skills as trust in news outlets erodes nationwide. I want to confront the rising tide of fear-based clickbait masquerading as news. Sensationalism has replaced journalism, not to inform, but to provoke emotional knee-jerk reactions. This corrodes democracy by dividing us with fear. We can't function as an informed electorate if every headline is designed to trigger anxiety without providing essential context. I urge readers to notice emotionally loaded terms like outrage, devastating, and or under siege, words that create panic but rarely offer real solutions. In 1933, FDR warned, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." Today, fear is a marketing strategy. To honor his wisdom, we must embed critical thinking and media literacy into education, just as fear has embedded itself into our news. And this letter comes from Gilda Valles of Tucson. Arizona bill exploits anti-Semitism to nix free speech. As a Jewish Arizonan, I am disgusted by those trying to use Jewish history to oppose and stifle free speech. Critique and open debate are Jewish values. The right to criticize the current Israeli government is not harming Israel. It's actually essential, and many Israelis I know are doing the same. In my opinion, the Anti-Semitism in Education Bill, House Bill 2867, that Governor Katie Hobbs vetoed, was actually anti-Semitic by attacking free expression about topics important to Jews. If you want to crack down on free speech, do it yourself. Don't try to use Jews as your excuse. And those are a few of the letters to the editor today. I'm going to turn now to Abigail Van Buren's opinion in her Dear Abby column. It's titled, Sister-in-Law Responds to Gift with Sharp Tongue. Dear Abby, my husband and I recently moved out of state. His only living relative, a sister, recently came to visit. She has never been married. She is a retired professional and has a good retirement, especially since she has no children. During her visit, she gave us a housewarming greeting party with a $50 Visa gift card. This was unusual as she has never in 50 years given us money. She's very tight with her money and always insists on paying for her part of any restaurant bill separately. While she was here, I made a comment about her paying for a $5 coffee for her brother, and she became highly offended. I knew she would be, so I kind of goaded her. She then mentioned the $50 gift card she gave us and said I probably didn't even tell her brother about it, even though he was in the room when she gave it to us. We don't need her money, and I want to mail it back to her and say thanks for the thought, but we don't need it. What do you think I should do? Signed, Thanks, No Thanks, in Florida. Dear Thanks, really? I think that rather than try to create more problems with your sister-in-law, you should write her and apologize for your comment about the $5 coffee. Instead of returning the gift card, be gracious and accept it. Shame on you for knowingly stirring the pot. Dear Abby, I'm a widow. My partner died 10 months ago. We were together for 7 years, but never married. I have now found a partner who is 12 years younger than I am. We love each other and want to be married. My problem is he is only separated from his wife. He says he doesn't want her and he hates her because she betrayed him. They are getting a divorce, but if I stay with him, I feel that I'd be stepping between them. What should I do? Stay and hope for the best or leave him? Signed, In the Middle in Massachusetts. Dear In the Middle, this romance is in its infancy. You have been widowed for only 10 months. There is wisdom in the adage that after a trauma like the one you have suffered, a person should make no important decisions for a year. Has this man or his wife filed the divorce papers, or is he only thinking about it? If the papers have been filed, then you are not coming between him and his wife. Divorce can also be traumatic, and frankly, I am surprised that this man would contemplate remarriage before his divorce is final. Rather than decide whether to leave him, take your time and see how this relationship plays out. And those are the opinions of Abigail Van Buren today. Here's a few of the things that happened today in history. In 1667, French Dr. Jean Baptiste Denais performed the first known blood transfusion. In 1775, the Continental Congress appointed General George Washington as the Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army. In 1776, nearly 3 weeks before the 4th of July, Delaware leaders voted to declare its independence from Britain, and Pennsylvania in New Castle, its future state capital. The date became known as Delaware's Separation Day. In 1836, Arkansas was admitted as the 25th state. And in 1844, the U.S. Patent Office approved a patent for Charles Goodyear's vulcanized rubber, a combination of India rubber, sulfur, and white lead that was heat resistant. And in 1864, Congress approved a bill equalizing pay, arms, equipment, and medical services for black American troops. Congress also made the measure retroactive. In 1989, Sub Pop Records released Nirvana's debut album, Bleach, which the band had recorded at Reciprocal Recording in Seattle for about $600. In 1996, iconic American jazz singer Ella Fitzgerald died at 79. And in 2022, Microsoft ended support for its web browser, Internet Explorer, in favor of its new one, dubbed Edge. And those are just a few of the things that happened today, Sunday, January 15th, 2025. Next is the horoscope. Aries, March 21st to April 19th. Rethinking your life path? Looking for evidence that your struggles aren't in vain. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. Stirring the pot? Mixing it up delivers mixed results. Avoid making a reckless decision. Gemini, May 21st to June 21st. Making smarter investments? Prove that you've learned from a past financial blunder. Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd. Crisis of confidence? Another's criticism tempts you to chart a less challenging course. Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd. You crave freedom, but a power play would be more reckless than revolutionary. Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd. Facing a setback? Reevaluate your resources. You can recover from this. Libra, September 23rd to October 23rd. Success won't come easy. You need more than luck. Scorpio, October 24th to November 21st. Calling the shots? Making a dictatorial decision could come back to haunt you. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st. Today, limitations you encounter in a passion project force you to rethink your motives. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. A familiar family issue rears its head. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Shocks to your sense of emotional security awaken your inner provocateur. Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. Limit your spending. There are hidden blessings in restriction. And that is the horoscope for today, Sunday, June 15th. I'll end today's broadcast with a look at a few of the comics. We'll look at Peanuts. Charlie Brown's in his bedroom saying, "They're all in this photo album." My dad has always liked classic cars, he's talking to Linus. Here's a picture of him standing next to his 58 Aston Martin. Linus says, "Wow." Here's the 59 Alfa Romeo that he fixed up, and here he is sitting in his silver 68 YK140. "I like this picture. He's standing next to his 69 Mangusta." "Fantastic," says Linus. Snoopy walks away. "I have a few photographs of my dad, too." Here he is, standing next to his classic 68 red supper dish. Next is Pickles. Earl and his wife are sitting on the front porch. His wife says, "You and I are a good team, aren't we?" Earl says, "Uh-huh." She says, "Someone once said, individually, we're one drop, but together we're an ocean. Isn't that the truth? Earl said, not really. If we're each one drop, that makes two drops. Two drops is not an ocean. It's not even a puddle. It's more like a dribble. He says, so individually we're one drop, but together we're a dribble. His wife says, why do I talk to you? And next is Blondie. The scene is Dagwood's at his front door. Mr. Dithers, his boss, has come to visit. He says, happy Father's Day, my boy. Dagwood says, thanks, boss. What a nice surprise. His boss says, actually, sometimes I feel like a father figure to you. Dagwood says, no kidding. His boss says, that reminds me, I brought you a few things. These unfinished contracts need to be finished and on my desk first thing in the morning. Or by noon is fine. No pressure. Dagwood is in his chair reading the contracts. Blondie says, did you decide what you want to do for Father's Day, honey? And Dagwood says, tell the kids maybe I'll see them for dinner. And that's all the time we have today, unfortunately. This has been the second hour of the Arizona Republic, the Sunday, June 15th, 2025 issue. I hope you enjoyed the program. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your volunteer reader. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week. Keep listening to the premium programming offered by Sun Sounds of Arizona. And if you missed a program you'd like to hear, go to the sunsounds.org website, click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then click on the words Demand Podcasts. You'll see a list of articles available to you. Hopefully, you'll find the one you're looking for. Thank you so much for spending your time with me. And again, happy Father's Day to all you dads out there.